Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning. I'm Charlie Herman. I'm joined by our regulars, Joan Osero with The New York Times and Rana Faruhar with Time Magazine. Well, a solution to the escalating crisis in Ukraine has yet to be found. So today, since we are Money Talking, we're going to take a closer look at the economic roots of the conflict and see if there might be clues as to how the diplomatic efforts to resolve it might play out in the weeks ahead. It's worth remembering that a major source of the uprising in Ukraine was over trade. Was the country going to form closer economic ties with Europe and the West, or was it going to look to its neighbor in the East, Russia? President Viktor Yanukovych chose Russia and the people. Well, after the uprising, he's not the president there anymore. So, Joe, to start, what is the state of Ukraine's economy?
Well, in the old Soviet Union, Ukraine was a basket case. In the post-Soviet economy, when it's on its own, it has remained a basket case. There is no former state of the Soviet Union that has had such slow growth as the Ukraine. And, you know, it's a commodity-oriented economy, very dependent on Russia for its energy needs. And over the course of the last few years, it's run into severe economic trouble, so much so that they needed a giant loan from the International Monetary Fund, a loan that was then suspended when they wouldn't put in the reforms that the IMF asked for.
So, Joe, what now looks like a political crisis at its root may actually be an economic crisis.
Well, it certainly began that way. That's a legitimate way to think about it. You know, you have a country in trouble that used to be a satellite of a part of the Soviet Union and remains, in the eyes of Russia, a satellite of Russia. They need money desperately. Where are they going to get it? Are they going to get it from the Russians, which is what Russia would like, because then they get to keep control, and there's a lot of infrastructure in the UK that Russia needs? Or are they going to get it from Europe and really sort of change the way they look from Russia to Europe and become a more westernized place?
And I think what's interesting is the whole thing shows the cracks in both the emerging markets and in particular petrostates like Russia, but also Europe's vulnerability in terms of its energy supply and how shaky it is, how easy it is would be for Europe to slip back into recession. So I think that one of the reasons that markets were very wobbly in the last few days is that Russia is very broken. You know, it's going to grow barely 1% this year with oil prices over $100. That's amazing. That just shows how screwed up economically the country is. But also the fact that Europe is so vulnerable. It gets, you know, Germany gets about 30% of its energy from Russia. It's the largest trading partner aside from China. There are deep roots that European banks have in the Russian economy. And so, you know, there's this sort of toxic stew, and it's really exposing the slow growth and dysfunctional economic and political models of the emerging markets, many of which, including Russia, won't even grow as fast as the U.S. this year, which is kind of amazing. It's like the world is upside down.
But if there's a conflict that's going on in Russia, in Europe, and a lot of it has to do with gas and oil, and that causes the price to go up, couldn't that actually help Russia, which is so dependent on oil prices?
Well, it should do, but, you know, it costs so much money to get Russian oil out of the ground, in part because it's under layers of tundra in very difficult to reach places. You know, the Russians need an extremely high energy price just to break even. They should have been spending, you know, as is the case with almost all petrostates, some of that money over the last decade or so to diversify their economy. But that's not what Putin did, and that's why they're in trouble now.
The great shame of the Russian economy, actually, is that they have so much human capital that they have never unveiled or never allowed to blossom. You know, it really has become a kleptocracy, a corrupt state that suppresses people instead of enabling the huge amount of entrepreneurship. And because they're a petrostate, all the things that we talk about in the U.S. to counter the measures that would have some significance would be to fight their energy with our energy. Now we have energy. We have natural gas. And so there's a lot of talk about, well, maybe the United States can replace Russia's the natural gas that Russia sends to Europe by doing it ourselves. But that's a long ways off.
The only thing I'm wondering is, you know, is a solution for what's happening in Russia and in Ukraine, is it going to have an economic basis to it, or is it going to be purely political and military? I mean, where's the solution going to come from?
I think what's interesting is, you know, you said in the beginning this is a political crisis with economic roots. Well, this economic crisis is going to have a political solution first before it gets solved. Basically, you need someone to come into Russia, a new leadership, and really do the things that Joe was saying, diversify the economy, capitalize on this tremendous human talent. Otherwise, this country is going to be just like every other petrostate.
One of the things that's going to happen is if this crisis continues is the Russian stock market is really going to tank. And Russia, you know, they need foreign investment. And foreign investments are already nervous enough about going to Russia because they know the rules can be rigged. There's no rule of law. There can be all kinds of problems. And the more you see this kind of crisis taking place, the more fearful foreign investors will be of going into the country, and that will hurt Russia badly.
Well, let's take a look at some of the other stories that we're watching in the weeks ahead. Rana, what are you paying attention to?
So I'm thinking about the retirement crisis. This is something that we've talked about a little bit on the show in the past. You know, the real debt crisis in this country is the looming retirement crisis. The average retirement savings of people between 55 and 64 is only $120,000. That comes out to a little over $600 a month. If you live to be 80, it's not enough to keep people going through retirement. And I think that as you see these workforce participation numbers going down, a lot of those numbers are baby boomers leaving the workforce, either by force, or by choice. Either way, they're going into a retirement that they're not prepared for. I think that's going to have a lot of economic ramifications, and I'm actually going to be out in California next week reporting on that.
Joe, what are you looking at?
I'm looking at law firms. First, we had the implosion of Dooley LeBoeuf. I love that name, Dooley LeBoeuf, which was a giant sprawling law firm that culminated recently, this week in fact, in a handful of its former partners being indicted for accounting fraud. Now we have the famous Washington, D.C. firm of Patton Boggs, well known as a lobby firm, which has basically hired a restructuring expert to either merge the firm or do something with it. They've also laid off a lot of lawyers, and they're also having problems. And it just shows that the law is not immune to the laws of business. Like every other firm.
Lawyers need good lawyers.
Lawyers need good lawyers.
Well, we'll be watching those stories and all the week's financial news at WNYC.org. Don't forget, you can take this program with you as a podcast available on iTunes. Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine and Joe Nocera with The New York Times. Thanks as always.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talking from WNYC.